A Navy UAV is down off the coast of Maryland. The FAA issues a new AC for the use of electronic flight bags. And NetJets announces the largest private aircraft purchase in history. This is Aero News for Tuesday, June 12, 2012. I'm Glenn Moyer. A Navy UAV has gone down on the eastern shore of Maryland, according to the Navy and the Coast Guard. Initial reports are that the 44-foot UAV is part of the Navy's Patuxent River Naval Station's Unmanned Aviation and Strike Weapons Program. The Associated Press reports that it went down just after noon on Monday near Bloodsworth Island. No injuries were reported in connection with the accident. The blog SeaWaves indicates that the UAV is one of five Global Hawk aircraft that was acquired from the Air Force for the Broad Area Maritime Surveillance Demonstrator Program. The BAMS-D program has been working on employing high-altitude unmanned patrol aircraft since November of 2006. According to the NAVAIR website, the Navy's RQ-4A Global Hawk UAVs fly up to 60,000 feet. The high-flying aerial vehicle can operate for more than 30 hours above most weather. The Coast Guard has set up a safety zone around the marshy area where the aircraft went down in Dorchester County, Maryland. Meanwhile, an F-22 Raptor has been involved in what the Air Force classifies as a Class A accident, meaning that there was either a fatality, permanent disability, loss of the aircraft, or property damage totaling more than $2 million. The pilot was reportedly not injured. The aircraft, which is based at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida, was reportedly being flown by a student pilot on only his second sortie in the aircraft. He had previously flown other Air Force aircraft and had completed classroom and simulator training before the flight. The 43rd Fighter Squadron is the Air Force's formal training unit for the F-22. The damage is reportedly repairable, the Air Force says. The accident, which occurred last Thursday evening, does not appear to be tied to the ongoing problems with the Raptor's oxygen system, according to FlightGlobal.com. But the Air Force has not released any further details about the mishap. After over a year of work, the FAA has published a revised Advisory Circular, or AC, that provides guidelines on the certification, airworthiness, and operational approval of electronic flight bags, or EFBs. While the information contained in the AC 120-76B is consistent with previous FAA information on this subject, there are a variety of new terms and concepts introduced in the AC. This AC maintains the familiar Class 1, 2, and 3 criteria for EFB hardware and Type A, B, and C classifications for its software. One important change is that Class 1 and 2 EFBs are both considered portable electronic devices, or PEDs, unless they host EFB applications and meet other criteria specified in the AC. There we go again with all those initials. A device classified as a PED is generally restricted to use in cruise flight and or above 10,000 feet. Specific items to consider and document when using an EFB include: the operator must have a secondary or backup source for aeronautical information displayed on an EFB using Type A or B software. The secondary or backup information can be displayed electronically or by other means. The operator must be prepared to document compliance with EMI testing, proper stowage and mounting of the EFB, rapid decompression testing of a representative device, and policies for EFB use. Fortunately, the revised AC makes clear that rapid decompression testing must only be accomplished on one representative sample of the make and model EFB that the operator plans to use. For example, many vendors are able to provide documentation indicating that they have performed rapid decompression testing on popular EFBs, such as the Apple iPad. So long as the operator can obtain this documentation, it's not necessary for testing to be performed on the specific devices to be used by the operator. In other words, if someone else has destroyed an iPad in rapid decompression testing, you don't have to destroy yours. Just get a copy of the other person's documentation. In the largest aircraft purchase in private aviation history, NetJets Incorporated announced it will add up to 425 new aircraft to its worldwide fleet under a purchase agreement with Cessna and Bombardier. The transaction has a total value of $9.6 billion and launches the new NetJets Signature series of aircraft. The details of the order include up to 275 Bombardier Challenger aircraft, including 100 firm orders and options for 175 more, with deliveries scheduled to begin in 2015. Up to 150 Cessna Citation Latitudes, including 25 firm orders and options for 125 more, with deliveries beginning in 2016. The addition of these new midsize cabin aircraft, along with the recently ordered Embraer Phenoms and Bombardier Globals, marks the launch of a new NetJets Signature Series of aircraft as part of their 10-year business plan. The Signature Series planes are the first aircraft that NetJets helped design from start to finish. They are bigger, faster, quieter, and offer longer range than similar aircraft of the previous generation. NetJets began in 1964 as the first aircraft charter and management company in the world. Today, NetJets offers a full range of private aviation solutions through its programs in North America and Europe. And subject to obtaining relevant regulatory approvals, NetJets will also offer aircraft management and charter services in China through NetJets China Business Aviation Limited, a joint venture between NetJets and a consortium of Chinese investors. The NetJets companies offer worldwide flight operations. Members of the Arkansas Congressional Delegation jointly announced late last week that 9 Arkansas airports will receive grants from the U.S. Department of Transportation for repairs and new construction at their facilities. In making the announcement, U.S. Senator Mark Pryor said, quote, "Local airports are a vital resource for Arkansas communities, helping attract economic development and giving residents more convenient travel options," end quote. 9 grants, all to general aviation airports, total more than $2 million in development and improvements. Meanwhile, 5 Vermont airports are in line for $1.2 million in FAA funds to conduct repairs and enhancements, that state's congressional delegation announced recently. And not too far away from there, the FAA is awarding over $600,000 in AIP grants to 4 airports in Maine, that according to the Associated Press. When Aero News continues, Superman had X-ray vision, and apparently so does NASA. A group of pilots plan to walk the streets in New York City today. And what goes up must come down.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Aero News continues now for Tuesday, June 12th. I'm Glenn Moyer. NASA's New Star mission is scheduled to launch from Kwajalein Atoll in the Central Pacific Ocean on June 13th, no earlier than 0830 Pacific Daylight Time. The observatory, which will hunt for black holes and other exotic objects using specialized X-ray eyes, will be launched from a Pegasus XL rocket carried by an Orbital Science Corporation L-1011 Stargazer plane. The plane will take off from Kwajalein Atoll an hour before launch, flying out over the Pacific Ocean. About 5 seconds before launch, the Pegasus XL rocket, also from Orbital, will drop from the plane, ignite, and propel New Star to space. Why launch from the air? Well, plane-assisted launches are less expensive than those that take place from the ground. Less fuel is needed to boost cargo away from the pull of Earth's gravity. New Star is part of NASA's Small Explorer program, which builds focused science missions at relatively low cost. Roughly 1 week after the launch, engineers will command New Star to deploy its lengthy 33-foot boom, allowing the telescope to focus X-ray light into crisp images. Unlike visible light telescopes, X-ray telescopes require a long distance between the mirrors and detectors to focus the light. Think of it like wearing a pair of glasses, but having them about 3 or 4 feet away from your face. Science operations are expected to begin about 30 days after the launch. Pilots for United and Continental Airlines, represented by the Airline Pilots Association International, will be conducting informational picketing at the Crowne Plaza Hotel at 1605 Broadway Street in New York, beginning at 9 a.m. today. The hotel is the site of the United Continental Holdings annual shareholders meeting. The pilots say the message they will convey to management, shareholders, passengers, and the media is that it is time to complete the endgame negotiations now underway with the company. ALPA says that 2 years past the announcement of the merger of United and Continental Airlines, there's still no joint collective bargaining agreement. United and Continental pilots' contract amendable dates were 12/31/2009 and 12/31/2008, respectively. United and Continental pilots say they are still living and operating under bankruptcy-era and concessionary contracts. The union says that if the company cannot comply with the agreed-upon June 15th deadline to reach an agreement on a joint collective bargaining agreement, the pilots of United and Continental will call on the National Mediation Board to grant their request for a release from mediation. Repairing tiny cracks in the wings of Airbus's flagship A380 Super Jumbo will take 8 weeks for each aircraft if the work is done in one go, according to aviation magazine Flight Global. An Airbus spokesman told AFP that the repairs would take weeks, but declined to confirm the 8-week time frame, equivalent to about 30,000 hours of labor, reported by Flight Global. The spokesman went on to say, quote, "It's up to the customer to decide if they want to do the repairs in one go or in several stops. They choose whatever best fits their operations and needs," end quote. The cracks are said to be no safety threat and have not damaged the plane's popularity with travelers. The European plane maker is to begin building A380 wings without the defect, using a new type of aluminum, in 2013, which means aircraft delivered from 2014 and onwards. Airbus has said it will cover the cost of repairs, but will not pay any compensation for lost revenue during the work. Two men wearing parachute backpacks and helmets were arrested after allegedly climbing up a communications tower in Newton, Massachusetts, that according to police. At about 9:15 on Sunday evening, police were called to the old WHDH-TV tower, where they found two men about halfway up the roughly 1,200-foot-tall structure. Police got the men's attention and called them down from the tower. Safely on the ground, the men climbed over the barbed wire fence that surrounded the structure and were arrested. One of the men's helmets had a camera affixed to it, so there was little question about their intent. Can you say Geronimo? The pair were charged with trespassing, disturbing the peace, and wanton destruction of property. So it's true what they say. What goes up must come down. And then they go to jail. Well, that's a wrap for this report of Aero News. Thanks for listening. I'm Glenn Moyer. You're now cleared for departure.